until something is formalized in writing, it's hard to say that, if you will, agreements can be made that quickly and that they will be upheld.
New trade fears rattle financial markets and farmers. It's Tuesday, June 26th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the U.S. defense chief heads to Asia. Immigration and climate change concern Australians. Seeking more Korean reunions. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Reports that President Donald Trump is planning to prohibit Chinese firms from investing in U.S. tech companies has been refuted by the White House. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin called the reports false, fake news, and said that new restrictions would apply to more countries than only China. The reports of a proposed ban fueled a stock market decline Monday, sending the major averages down more than 1% and tech-related stocks down about 2%. Investors appeared concerned about Trump's trade policies possibly not carrying over to Americans as a whole, even though a new survey says for the first time in his presidency that a majority of Americans support Trump's handling of the economy. On yesterday's program, we heard an upbeat assessment of the trade tariff situation from John Bays of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. But today, a different opinion comes from Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics, Crop Market Specialist at the University of Iowa, during his conversation with VOA Mandarin reporter Monica Hsu.
You know, in a certain sense, we've already seen some of the impact being translated already. For example, when we look at the soybean market, we have already seen a fairly dramatic drop in prices over the past several days within the marketplace, reflecting the uncertainty, about, trade flows if these tariffs are implemented, coming up on July 6th. There has been a pullback on pricing already for those more annual crops like soybeans, rice. It's coming at a time when at least not a lot of product is being sold at the current moment, so there's not a lot of significant actual damage, if you will, to farmers yet. It's more the potential of lost income as we look into the harvest season coming up this fall, that any sort of severe losses would be seen by U.S. farmers and exporters.
So that will affect U.S. farmers' incomes this year?
Yeah, it will end up impacting them this year, especially as we move into the fall.
Do you think this, trade dispute will be lasting, continuing until fall?
Well, it could. If we already look now, we've basically had trade threats being made on both sides for the past, basically 5-6 months now. And so it is quite likely that we will still continue to see effects as we move into the fall, even if the tenor of the talks turns to more conciliation as we move over the next couple of months.
But why, if there's some deal being reached by both sides, it will still not be that good for farmers this year?
Well, in this case, there were thoughts that deals were in place previously. In fact, 3 weeks ago or so, we were under the assumption that the U.S. and China had reached an accord about trade, and there was talk about the tariffs being off the table now, but that did not last long. And so until something is formalized in writing, it's hard to say that agreements can be made that quickly and that they will be upheld.
Chad Hart, Associate Professor of Economics, Crop Market Specialist at the University of Iowa, speaking with VOA Mandarin reporter Monica Hsu. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are currently trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea limits family reunions. Mattis begins trip to China as tensions rise. Water and mud block rescue attempt for 12 boys inside Thai cave. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. As the world marked the 68th anniversary of the Korean War, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis began an Asia trip that takes him for the first time as defense chief to China, a trip that occurs amid trade and security tensions with Beijing. China state-run media quoted the defense ministry as saying a healthy and stable Sino-U.S. military-to-military relation is in accordance with the mutual interests of both countries. Mattis, who will also stop in Japan and South Korea, told reporters en route that he wants to have a conversation and do a lot of listening. The trip comes after the U.S. disinvited China to the RIMPAC multinational naval exercises off Hawaii, following its military buildup in the South China Sea. U.S. contacts with Taiwan are also an irritant, but North Korean denuclearization is expected to be a high U.S. priority following the historic U.S.-North Korea summit in Singapore June 12th. Robert Manning, senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the threat of big power confrontation, especially in the South China Sea, is very real.
On a whole range of issues, we need to create some kind of framework for strategic stability with China before this gets out of control. And that's true from the nuclear level to the missile defense level to the global commons, maritime, space, cyber. And we're a long way from that. The Chinese have not, over the years, responded to U.S. calls for a dialogue, for example, on nuclear issues. And I think we need to move the ball forward because I think we're really risk confrontation going forward if we continue with the status quo.
Is the South China Sea the biggest issue?
That's the most pressing because we have a growing Chinese presence and an American naval presence. I guess in the last 5 or 6 years, Obama administration achieved some kind of code of communication to avoid incidental conflicts. We've done that for maritime. There was progress on the air version of that. And I think we need to build on incidents at sea or incidents in the air type agreements so that the operators have an ability to communicate with the other operators of the Chinese air and naval forces.
As you know, this trip comes as the U.S. and South Korea agree to indefinitely suspend 2 exchange program training exercises in the aftermath of the U.S.-North Korea summit. Is this going to cause a security problem?
Not immediately. I think it was a large gift to China. The Chinese have been calling for what's called freeze for freeze. We freeze our exercises and North Korea freezes its missile and nuclear testing, and that's pretty much what we ended up with at the end of the Trump-Kim meeting. I think what really is going to matter is when Secretary of State Pompeo, in the next couple of weeks or so, goes to North Korea to follow up the president's trip, because if we don't have progress on the nuclear issue and with concrete deliverables from North Korea, then I don't see the rationale for suspending exercises.
Mattis said Sunday he is optimistic North Korea would soon hand over more remains of U.S. servicemen killed during the Korean War. The North has already returned the remains of over 200 U.S. soldiers. Monday, South Korea's prime minister revealed that the issue of moving North Korea's long-range artillery away from their border is under discussion. Immigration in Australia is too high, and the government is neglecting climate change, according to the nation's most respected annual poll. The survey also finds that Australians' trust in the United States as a world leader has fallen to a record low, as President Trump is seen as a critical threat to Australia's interests. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The annual poll conducted by the Lowy Institute, an independent policy think tank, charts Australian attitudes on foreign relations, the environment, immigration and democracy. The 2018 report found Australians' trust in the United States to act responsibly in the world has fallen from a peak of 83% in 2011 to just 55% this year. 2 in every 5 people surveyed said US President Donald Trump was a critical threat to Australia's interests. The survey also shows that Australians trust China and the United States equally, despite ongoing diplomatic tensions between Canberra and Beijing over alleged interference in Australia's domestic affairs. Almost 3/4 of Australian adults say the government is allowing too much investment from China. But Alex Oliver, the director of research at the Lowy Institute, says the poll reveals that Australians understand that trade with the Chinese is vital for prosperity.
Despite the fact that there are threats and Australians are wary on the one hand of some aspects of the China relationship, for example, the military threat that it might present in the future, or this year, foreign investment from China, overwhelmingly they focus on the economic relationships, on the upside there. It's China's our largest trading partner. It's very important for our economic prosperity. And more than 80% of Australians say it's the economic relationship that's more important than any sort of threat that China might pose.
The United Kingdom has earned Australians' highest level of trust, as it did last year. Climate change was another key part of the poll. More respondents believe the government in Canberra should do more to promote renewable sources of energy. Only 14% believe that Australia, which has comparatively high per capita rates of greenhouse gas emissions, should continue to focus on its traditional energy sources, such as coal and gas. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, calls to expand Korean family reunions. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Thailand's Navy is searching a cave complex in the northern Chiang Rai province for a 13-member under-16 youth soccer team believed trapped since Saturday. Authorities believe the team is trapped by rising waters caused by heavy rains. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the latest stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, limits placed by North Korea on the upcoming inter-Korean family reunions could be a sign of the difficult road that lies ahead to implement the recent denuclearization agreements made by Kim Jong-un. North and South Korea agreed last week to allow 100 separated family members from each side of the border to meet at the North's Mount Kumgang Resort from August 20th through the 26th. Bong Young-shik is a political analyst with the Yonsei University's Institute for North Korean Studies in Seoul, and he was not impressed by the plan.
But the scope of the agreement event is very disappointing. Because there are at least 50,000 registered separate family members alive in South Korea alone.
Millions of Korean families were forced apart by the division of the country at the end of World War II. There are now close to 56,000 registered separated family members in South Korea, according to the Ministry of Unification. Almost all of them are over 70 years old. The last inter-Korean family reunion took place in 2015 and involved 200 families from each side. In editorials Monday, the South Korean newspaper The Korea Times called the limited reunion insufficient and called on the two Koreas to pay more attention to humanitarian issues, and the Korean Herald called on the North to show a more active and forward-looking attitude. But Yonsei University's Bong Young-shik says the leadership in Pyongyang does not seem ready to ease any restrictions that it may perceive as threatening the Kim family's hold on power.
One thing is really clear, that Kim Jong-un leadership is still very much anxious about making important changes, exposing the system to the influence of the outside powers.
This week, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is visiting China, South Korea, and Japan, where he is expected to discuss implementing North Korea's denuclearization agreement and the U.S. decision to suspend major joint military drills between the United States and South Korea. Our thanks to VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Patton, along with Lee Yoon-ji, for contributing this report. You've been listening to VOA Asia. PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand is one of the great radio stations around Asia where you can hear our program on the radio. We thank everyone there who tuned in today. If for some reason you've missed part of our program, you can always catch it in its entirety on VOA Asia Facebook and at our website, voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Zineb Abdel-Rahman, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.